Final edition of the 2013 Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show. We do it a little differently here this week as our final season is now over. We sit in the studio and kind of break things down. We'll do it a little bit different, obviously, with no games to look ahead to next week. We'll review, obviously, the game this past weekend against Duquesne. We'll take a peek at the offense, the defense, and special teams, and also look ahead to the off-season plan. Matt Harmon sitting here with, again, the head coach of the Monmouth Hawks, Kevin Callahan. MU coming off a tough 33-23 loss at the hands of the Duquesne Dukes, the final game of the regular season taking place just this past Saturday in West Long Branch. Coaches, I say good morning to you as we record this one a bit earlier and listening to us after the Monmouth basketball game. A couple days now removed. I know losses are never easy to take and deal with, but a couple of days now of reflection. I would imagine this one even a little more difficult just because it's the last game of the year.
Well, this one is particularly hard for me to kind of come to grips with, I think, you know, first because it was the last game for 16 of our seniors who we had so much hope to send them out with a victory and with a winning record at 7-5, and we were unable to accomplish that. So, you know, that's still burning a little bit, and there were also some situations where I think we left some opportunities on the field and didn't quite make the most of some opportunities that came our way.
Take a peek at some key points in this game. Duquesne got off to a pretty quick start, going up 13-0, and then a nice drive that Monmouth was able to put themselves back into scoring position. 10-play, 62-yard strike that finished up with a Brandon Hill to Zach Fable 18-yard hookup, a drive that took 4 minutes and 40 seconds off the clock. And, Coach, after that drive, I got the sense that, you know, it took a little while for Monmouth to kind of wake up in this game a little bit, but I thought that drive maybe got the team back going a little bit.
It did, and I felt at that point that even though we had had a slow start through the first three series of the game, I thought that, you know, we were positioning ourselves to really begin to take control of it. I liked where we were at that point, and you know, the touchdown to Zach was certainly a huge play for us. It got us on the board, and you know, we had started to settle down on both sides of the ball.
After that place, about 12 minutes of scoreless activity, teams kind of trading field positions and opportunities, and then Duquesne able to get a 30-yard field goal with just 14 seconds left in the second quarter. And, you know, Coach, I feel like we've said this a couple times during the year, one of the crazier plays that I've seen. You know, you can go back to the game against Lehigh with the block punt and then the advancement of that kind of swung the game back and forth one way or the other. Lehigh winds up winning that one. And a play here on a kickoff after that field goal kind of did the exact same thing. Tevron Brandon got stuck almost in no man's land. The ball bounced. He was unable to get it. And Duquesne fields it at the 19-yard line. Just your immediate thought. Remember, we're on the radio here. Immediate thought, just watching that play kind of unfold. Because as I said on the radio, you wouldn't have believed it if you didn't see it.
Well, it was certainly very unusual. It was a deep kick. It wasn't meant to be an onside kick at all. It was kicked deep, but the wind was swirling pretty good, and that kick was into the wind. It came to the rest at about the 20-yard line. It was too deep for our ends or our second-level people to handle since it was over their head, and we tell them never to back up to catch the ball, so Tevron couldn't call it for the end to take. And as he was coming up to field it, the ball just kind of stopped and came straight down, and I think it caught Tevron a little bit by surprise. He put on the brakes. He didn't feel he wanted to lay out and try to catch the ball, so he stopped. The ball took a funny bounce to his left, and then when in trying to maneuver himself to get back in front of the ball, Tevron fell down. Duquesne was able to recover that ball deep in our territory on about the 19-yard line, and then one play later they were in the end zone.
Yeah, that one play gave them a 23-7 advantage, and in that case, you know, at least us sitting up in the box, you almost felt bad for the defense. You know, they had kind of gotten themselves back on track a little bit. They forced Duquesne into a field goal in the prior possession, and I'm sure everyone is thinking, all right, let's go in the locker room and get it figured out. We'll go down 16-7. We've got plenty of time to get ourselves back into this football game, and all of a sudden, you've got to look, even though there, I'm sure, were a couple of guys that were on the field for that kickoff return, you got to say, okay, defense, get back out there. And almost, I hate to say not fair because they're college athletes, but not fair in a way to say, now you've got to stop them and force them into another field goal.
Well, there were two special teams breakdowns in the first half that really put the defense in difficult field position. Certainly the one that we're talking about where Duquesne takes over on the 19-yard line. But earlier in the first quarter, we have a punt that we never get off, really. It's not necessarily blocked, but we don't get it off, and they tackle a punter, Eric Spillane, you know, deep in our territory, and the defense did rise up in that occasion and hold them to simply a field goal. But there was 10 points of the 23 that they had in the first half that were really set up by mistakes in the kicking game.
So then you go into halftime. Teams come back out third quarter. Monmouth able to answer, not with one, but two touchdown passes from Brandon Hill. One to Mike McLafferty from 56 yards out, one to Neil Sterling from 17 yards out. And despite being down 16, we had said our theme going into the third quarter was, all right, you're still within two possessions. It's still a two-possession game, albeit you're going to have to do it the most difficult way of getting themselves, Monmouth, back to a tie. That's score two touchdowns, get two two-point conversions, but yet that's exactly what Monmouth did.
It's exactly what we did, and not only the touchdown to Mike McLafferty, but Neil Sterling was instrumental in us bringing it back to a 23-23 game. As you mentioned, he had a touchdown, but he also had a pair of two-point conversions that Brandon Hill threw great balls to him, and we got it 23-23, and at that point, I really liked where we were. I felt we certainly had the momentum. The stands came alive. The bench was alive. And I felt we were just going to continue moving ahead from there.
And maybe as you look at it, special teams kind of a thorn in the side for Monmouth today. You mentioned the block kick. We talked about the play towards the end of the half. And on that ensuing kickoff, Duquesne able to get themselves a nice long return. Good field position, short drive for them. They go right back on the scoreboard to take a 30-23 lead. And to me, the game at that point almost had a feel like it was going to become a shootout. It didn't, because there were no points for another 13 minutes, but it kind of had that sense a little bit. But as you mentioned, Coach, special teams, such an important part of the game. You know, if you pin Duquesne back deep, the Monmouth defense, the way they were playing, probably able to get a three and out. It didn't look like Duquesne could sustain any kind of a drive, but that kickoff return really swung momentum back pretty quick.
Yes, Matt, that was a 55-yard kickoff return. It gave Duquesne the ball on our own 38, so the defense, again, was faced with a short field. But they did get them into a third and eight situation on that first possession, and then we had a coverage breakdown in the secondary where they were able to complete a 25-yard pass to give them a first down on the 11-yard line. On top of that, we had a roughing the passer call that moved the ball half the distance to the goal and gave them a first and goal from the five. Certainly a really difficult spot to be in on the defensive side.
You mentioned a penalty in that particular drive, and penalties certainly were an issue today. We talked about during the course of the broadcast, Monmouth, I think, among the lowest penalized teams in all of really FCS football, had just 43, I think, going into the game, 10 on this day. And defensively, you mentioned the roughing the passer call that kind of set Duquesne up, and a couple of offensive penalties really hurt in the fourth quarter. One nice drive that Monmouth had gotten themselves looked like they were going to, again, become a shootout type game on first down and 10. A 5-yard run gives you a second and 5, and then a penalty on a 5-yarder, a procedure penalty, makes it second and 10. And then Monmouth able to hit another long pass to Mike McLafferty that gets brought back on a face mask, an offensive face mask call, a personal foul against the offensive line that really, again, kind of stalled the drive and swung momentum back to Duquesne.
Well, those penalties were in the drive after Duquesne took the 30-23 lead. As you mentioned, we start moving the ball. I still think we had some momentum at that point. The offense was very upbeat, and I thought, all right, we're going to go down and tie this game at 30. We have the false start that you mentioned. Then we get the big completion of Mike McLafferty, and then it's all brought back because we have a personal foul, a face mask. And, you know, if you look at the swing in that drive, we had the ball on the plus 38 going in that drive, in our answering score, we end up with the ball on our minus 27. So it certainly flipped the field in Duquesne's favor, and then we end up punting from there.
It seemed like it was a day that we hadn't really seen during the course of the year, where penalties, especially on the offensive line, seemed to be a theme on this day. 4 or 5 procedure penalties. We just talked about the face mask penalty as well. Didn't really seem to be the day that you would have expected of a unit that over the course of the entire season had been pretty sharp up front.
They had, and you know, we were, on the season as a whole, we were not a team that's been heavily penalized at all. As a matter of fact, the 10 penalties Saturday was more than we had in the last 3 games combined. I thought we've been very disciplined throughout the season. We haven't committed a lot of penalties on either side of the ball, and to have 10 on that day, false starts, illegal procedures, illegal formations, defensive pass interference, roughing the passer, the personal fouls on offense. You know, anytime you have major penalties, they put your offense in a long yardage situation, they put you off schedule. And when you're off schedule, it's very difficult to keep drives going. And if we go back and look at all the penalties and when they occurred, you're going to find that in those drives, rarely do we score a touchdown. We might get a field goal out of it, but usually we end up punting the ball. And conversely, penalties on the defensive side always result in an automatic first down for the offense, and they're usually of the 15-yard variety, which really gives them additional field position.
Duquesne with a late field goal to put the game out of reach, 33-23. They wind up winning this football game. Coach, on the plus side, and I know there's no such thing as really a whole lot of positives out of a loss at the end of the year. KB Asante, another good game for him, 27 carries, 124 yards. He goes over the 1,000-yard mark to give Monmouth two guys over the 1,000-yard plateau, Julian Hayes being the other. The only team in FCS football to do it, and I believe only two teams in the entire country if you throw in the FBS schools with Wisconsin. A very impressive accomplishment. Asante with another very solid game.
A tremendous game by KB, and really was very proud of the way he ran and the tough yards that he was able to churn out. There was a couple times where he picked up key first downs on a third down play where it looked like he was stopped maybe a yard or 2 yards short of the first down marker, and he was able to keep fighting and keep battling and get us those first downs. Just had a tremendous day. Very happy for what he was able to do.
Good days on the offensive side as well for Neil Sterling. Coach talked about not only the touchdown down reception, but the two big two-point conversions. He finished up 7 catches for 79 yards. Mike McLaughlin in his final game in the blue and white, 4 catches for 113 yards and a score as well. We'll take a quick time out here. When we come back, Coach and I will break down the offensive side of the ball a little bit more in detail during the course of the 2013 season, defense and special teams to follow, and a look ahead to the offseason and 2014. We take a quick 2-minute break. We're back right after this with the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show on the Sure Sports Network. And we're back here sitting in the studio for the final edition of the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show. This 2013 season coming to a close this past Saturday in West Long Branch. Monmouth finishing up their year at 6-6. Coach and I breaking down the Duquesne game in detail in our prior segment. Let's move it into the offensive side. Now, Coach, as a whole, I'm not going to say grade everything because I think that's too broad of a question. But if you look, the preseason maybe expectations or the game-to-game expectations, how many times would you say during the course of the 12-game season the offense kind of did their job, maybe lived up to the goals that you guys set in a game-in, game-out basis?
Well, you know, I think when you look at the way the season unfolded, Matt, each game was kind of unique into itself. I thought that, you know, our goal going into the season was certainly to incorporate a first-time quarterback in Brandon Hill and get him comfortable with the offense and with the other players. He only came to us in the summer, so he did not have the benefit of spring practice. We were breaking in two new offensive linemen at both guards, Reese Johnston and Pete Ireland. So we needed to get the offensive line working as a unit. And we felt pretty good about our running back situation and our receiver position. There are two groups where we had a lot of players with game experience. So I think overall in the season, I thought the offense did a pretty good job. I thought that as we went on throughout the year, we got stronger. Our identity became a team that was going to be able to run the ball and get tough yards and have enough explosiveness in the pass game to create some big plays.
Some final numbers offensively for Monmouth, averaging just over 25 points per game. And maybe it's just the way that football exists both at the college and the professional level, Coach. When you think about having a balanced offense, here Monmouth is with two guys over 1,000 yards, Julian Hayes leading the way with 1,111, KB Asante with 1,080 on the year. So, you know, you think of those numbers and you say, boy, this was a team that just ran the football off the charts, probably rarely threw the ball, but Monmouth on the season actually threw for more than 500 yards more offense than they did rush the football. 2489 was the final tally passing yardage. But I guess maybe, as I said, in today's day and age of wanting to throw the football, that's actually pretty good balance.
It was very good balance, and you know, one of the things that we set out to do each week and on the season as a whole is to achieve that balance between the run and the pass. We're not strictly a running team, we're not strictly a passing team, and we're usually at our best when we're about 50% of each.
when you think about the rushing attack with both of those guys, Hayes and Asante, their numbers are so similar, it's almost scary in a way. You know, within about 30 yards of each other, Hayes 4.6 yards per carry, Asante 6 yards per carry, both very, very good. 7 touchdowns for Julian, 8 touchdowns for KB. They both do different things, but the numbers that they put up are almost identical.
They are, and they're very similar backs if you watch them on the field and watch them carry the ball. They're strong, powerful downhill backs that have the ability to run through a number of tackles. They're not easy to put on the ground. You can't bring them down with an arm tackle, and they're always getting yards after the first hit.
Oh, by the way, just a quick maybe note of interest. The third leading rusher on the team, Thaddeus Richards, 2 carries for 14 yards and scored twice when he had the football when he had the football in his hands. That's pretty good for Thaddeus.
He's very opportunistic. 2 carries, 2 scores. You got to like that productivity.
Brandon Hill's numbers, coach, on the season, 181 of 323. That's a 56 completion percentage, 56% completion percentage. 2356 is yardage, 19 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. And a couple of blips certainly on the radar for him his first year here at Monmouth. But overall, pleased with his play?
Certainly. I think that what we saw with Brandon is he became more and more comfortable within our offense each week of the season. As you mentioned, there were some blips. There were some games where he didn't play as well as he maybe did in some other times of the year. But I think on the whole, first-year starter, first time in our offense, first time working with this group of guys, very pleased with what he did.
3-game winning streak for Monmouth in the middle part of the season with wins over Columbia, Robert Morris, and Holy Cross, I should say Holy Cross, Columbia, and Robert Morris in that order. Coach, against Columbia, 37 points, Robert Morris, 35, and that Holy Cross game, such an impressive start to that contest before Holy Cross able to get back into it late. That may be the stretch where the offense was consistently week in and week out at their best.
I agree with you, Matt. I think when we had hit that point in the schedule, we really had things clicking on offense. We had great balance between the run and pass. We had both backs that were running extremely well. We demonstrated our ability to hit big plays through the air in the passing game and had the ability to make some explosive plays, as we call them. And I think the scores of those games are support that.
Monmouth had that stretch in the middle part of the year when both Asante and Julian Hayes went over 100 yards on consecutive weeks, 4 weeks in a row. Coach, maybe offensively, when the offense kind of had that one game peak, they scored 48 points against Cornell on the 19th of October. I say that 3-game stretch maybe their most consistent, but the Cornell game maybe when it was at their best.
I think that was the peak of what we did offensively, and I know we'll talk about defense in a moment, but that game in particular, Matt, was our homecoming game, and I think that might be the most complete game that we played all year.
The receiving core, we knew it was going to be deep going into the season. Neil Sterling led the way, 57 catches for 647 yards, an average of just over 11 per catch, 6 touchdowns on the year. Such a big target, coach, and obviously a huge part of the offense. You could think you could almost throw him the ball almost on every play and hope he just breaks something. I know that's not the way offense is run, but his year as a whole, despite getting all the attention that he usually gets game in and game out.
Very good year, and early on in the season, he was limping a little bit with an ankle injury, certainly not to the extent that it was a year ago. He was held back by that, but Neil showed the ability to really go make plays on the ball. His ability to go up and take the ball away from defenders is exceptional. He has excellent hands. He's got great body control, and he's a quarterback's dream. You love to throw to a ball to a receiver like that.
As we mentioned, we knew it would be a deep position going in. 7 guys all over 10 catches on the season. Lamar Davenport, the team's second-leading receiver, with 25. Coach, is that one thing? And I know, looking at numbers sometimes is a little bit misleading, but Sterling at 57 and Davenport at 25, would you imagine that the gap between 1 and 2 would have been a little bit closer at the end of the year?
Yeah, you think it would be. And I don't know why the numbers are skewed the way that they are. I think that's just the way it worked out. It certainly wasn't targeted more, and it just happened to be, the way the plays were called.
Unfortunate maybe for Mike McLafferty that he had the injury, missed a couple of games, and really wasn't at 100% until the last part of the year. 24 catches for McLafferty, 501 yards. He actually led the team in terms of yards per catch, just about 21 yards, 4 touchdowns. Talk about Sterling being a quarterback's dream. Certainly McLafferty would probably make the top couple picks when you fell asleep and thought about who would you want to throw to.
Without a doubt. And, you know, Mike gives you such a unique skill set to the tight end position, and we can do an awful lot of different things with him. He runs better than most tight ends that we see or we play against, most tight ends on this level. He has the athleticism to be split out, and we can isolate smaller defensive backs, corners on him, and he's got the speed to run by those guys. He's a great target in the pass game, and I think what we saw in the later portion of the schedule, probably the last four games when Mike was back 100% healthy, we saw his ability to make those explosive plays.
And we also saw the emergence of maybe the next guy in a long line of solid tight ends for Monmouth. Zach Fable finished up the year, 9 catches, 149 yards, 2 touchdowns, one of which coming in the final game of the season against Duquesne. Maybe not the same identical player as McLafferty, but he has some of the same qualities as McLafferty.
He does. And Zach is an extremely hard worker. This was his first year playing for us, as he redshirted a year ago. And we were very pleased with what he was able to bring to the table, certainly in those games where Mike wasn't 100% and not playing, but then is in a supportive role to Mike once Mike got back. And there was many times we had both of them on the field at the same time. And, you know, he's just a very, very hard worker. And as we saw in the most recent game, he has a lot of productivity.
Eric Sumlin, Thaddeus Richards, and Elijah Phillips, all with 17 catches on the season. Julian Hayes with 11. Those were the other guys who had double digits in terms of catches. Coach Elijah Phillips, talk about him just real quick. Making the transition after playing on the defensive side of the ball, 17 catches for him, couple of touchdowns, was out there for a ton of plays, special teams guy a little bit as well, and a real good blocker when he was stalking guys down the field in that run game. His year as a whole, how you would grade it out, making that switch from defense to offense?
I think Elijah certainly excelled on the offensive side of the ball. When we made the switch last spring, you know, I know Elijah was excited about it. We were certainly excited to see what he could do over there. Some injuries had kind of set him back when he was playing defense, and this was an opportunity for him to go to the offensive side and just cut it free and go play football. And I think you hit it right on the head when you talked about his blocking. You know, his value was certainly a lot greater than what he was able to do in terms of receptions and scoring touchdowns when the ball was thrown his way. His ability to block in the run game was outstanding. And you go through every game of the season, and there's Elijah making key blocks on the perimeter, helping KB Asante or Julian Hayes pick up extra yards.
When we look ahead to 2014, we'll kind of focus on this unit a little bit, because there are 3 fifth-year guys who will no longer be with the team. But, Coach, the offensive line going in, I know, was expected to be a huge strength. When you think about Josh Patterson, Brandon Maxwell, and Mike Hunchak, all guys who have been around the program for a long time, all back in their fifth year, that's somewhat of a rarity when you think about it. And when you have 2 tackles and a center that have been there for as long as those guys have had, and probably indicated by the numbers that Monmouth was able to put up offensively. Again, maybe not great every week, but over the course of a whole season, when you get 2 guys over 1,000 yards and your quarterback throws for over 2,300 yards, pretty good year as a whole for those guys up front.
It was a good year, and, you know, even back as early as training camp, we felt that was our most experienced position group, with 3 fifth-year seniors in the group, guys who have started for at least 3 years apiece. You know, we were going to rely very heavily on that group, on that unit, offensively. And I think the production of both of our running backs, and with what Brandon Hill was able to do through the air, I think is kind of a testament to the play of the offensive line.
On the season, Monmouth with 39 touchdowns. Their red zone score is 31 of 36 for 86%. Inside the red zone, 24 of 36 scoring touchdowns. Coach, and a couple other numbers before we wrap this up. Third down conversions. You know, every coach talks about how important third down is. Monmouth on the whole, 70 of 176 for 40%. Is 40% something that coaches would sign for?
40% is the minimum that we want. That's our target each and every week, to get 40% or better. So, you know, while we'd like to be a little bit higher than the 40%, that's certainly acceptable at that level.
Monmouth on the season, 303 total points on the year. Coach, again, I know it's hard maybe a couple of days after the end of the season, but if you said offensively, and if you want to finish the statement, offensively we didn't do enough, and then you fill in the blank, what would you say during the course of the year?
scoring points. We have a goal that we want to score at least 27 points in each game, and I think that's one area where we fell a little bit short. And in most of the cases, as we look back on it, and we certainly will, I think you'll find that a lot of times it was self-inflicted mistakes that kept us from getting in the end zone. I know we averaged under 27 points on the year, and that's something that we would like to be a little bit higher.
Monmouth will bring back a good chunk of skill guys, Brandon Hill, KB Asante, Julian Hayes, and a good bulk of the receiving core also coming back next year. We'll again talk about what maybe the biggest holes are to fill in our last segment. We'll take a quick time out here. We'll make it another two-minute pause. When we come back, Coach and I will break down the defense in detail, throw in the special teams unit as well, and then an off-season look and a look ahead to 2014 to follow. This is the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show on the Shore Sports Network. Time to take a look at the defense and the special teams. The final edition of the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show. Matt Harmon and the head coach sitting in a studio getting this put together for you, and hopefully a nice detailed look. We've talked about the offense. Now time to switch sides and take a peek at the defense. We'll throw in the special teams unit as well. Coach, we'll start with some numbers first. The defense as a whole, maybe one of the biggest question marks was how the defense would respond after a not great year in 2012. 23.7 points per game, the yardage per game about 344 over the course of a 12-game haul. We said offensively you would wish to maybe score a couple more points as we finished up our last segment. Those two numbers are usually the ones that you can go pretty quick to and say, okay, the defense gives up this many points and this many yards. Grade out your team's performance with those that I just gave you.
Well, on the defensive side, our goal each week is to hold the opponent under 21 points. And, we were at 23.7 on the whole. But I think what's hidden in there, Matt, is the fact that there were over 60 points on the season that were scored as a result of a special teams play where the defense wasn't on the field, or when the offense was on the field by maybe an interception that was, or a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. I think if you pull those numbers out of it, you're going to be probably in the 18 points per game category, between 18 and 19 anyway. And I think that's a number that you would take any time. I think it was a significant improvement over 2012 in the points per game that the defense allowed. I think what you saw on the defensive side was kind of a maturation of that group as the season wore on. Early on, the first two opponents at Montana State and at Liberty, we played, two high-powered offenses and gave up over 40 in each one of those. I think we started coming back to where we need to be in the Lehigh game. And then from that point on, we played pretty solid on the defensive side of the ball. I think we did a great job on our third down conversion percentage, and we kept the opponents out of the end zone, and many times even facing short fields, we held them to field goal opportunities. So I think overall, as that group grew together and developed and matured, I think they became a much more solid unit as the season went on.
Coach, you bring up an excellent point when you do just kind of that comparison between what the Monmouth offense is doing to opposed to what other opposition's defenses are doing against the Monmouth defense. You said 40% is a minimum on third down for the Monmouth offense. Well, the defense held their opponents to 32%. Defensively, is it the same goal? Are you looking for 40% and under if you're looking for 40% and over for the offense?
That's what it is. We try to keep the opponents under 40% on our third down conversions. And as you said, we came in on the season right around 32%, which is a number that you would take in any game. And quite honestly, we weren't as good. We weren't up to that standard in the most recent game. I think they were probably closer to 50% on their third down conversions, or that number may have been in the 20s.
When you think about red zone stuff, so important when teams are moving in, Monmouth offensively 31 of 36 for 86%, defensively a little bit better, 76%, and then the touchdown number, certainly important too. The defense for Monmouth able to hold teams to just 22 touchdowns when they were inside the red zone, 22 of 41 for 54%, so a lot of field goals when the teams get deep inside of Monmouth territory.
And when you get to that part of the field, your defensive thinking is they're going to get a field goal, but you don't want them to get any more than that and limit them to a field goal opportunity. And when we talk to on the defensive side of the ball, we talk about keeping them their touchdown ratio to one out of every three attempts down there, or 66% touchdown ratio, and that's what we want to do. And I think we were pretty close to that number this year.
Individually, Coach, I'll start with this guy. He was one of our last guests on the show during the course of the season when we had in studio or on-site guest Dave Demersion. His year this year, now I understand he's a fifth-year senior, certainly understands the offense probably better than just about anybody that Monmouth would throw out there, but his season all in all was amazing. 81 total tackles, 13 and a half for loss, 4 sacks, had 5 pass breakups, recovered a couple fumbles, really did everything probably and more that you would have thought going into the year.
There is no doubt. Dave was our leader on the defensive side. Not only was he our captain, but he was also the guy that everyone on the defensive side and for the team, for that matter, looks to and respects a great deal. You know, Dave is what I call a self-made player. He's worked so hard and battled through injuries earlier in his career to get himself on the field, and I think he really established himself as the true leader of our defensive unit.
There was a little bit of a hole for Monmouth in the middle of that 4-3 alignment, filled this year by Temple transfer Gary Onakuzi, who finished up the year a second in team tackles, 66 on the year, 2 of those for a loss, had 1.5 sacks overall. His play, Coach, and he's really more of a first and second down guy, so his numbers may be a little bit skewed because he's not usually out there in third down, definite passing type situations. But did you get out of him what you had hoped bringing him in from Temple?
We certainly did, and you know, we had a need at that position, and Gary stepped in and filled that need, I think, you know, rather well. Again, it was a situation that coming to us late, he did not have the opportunity to be with us during spring practice, so it was kind of learning on the job, much like what we talked about with Brandon Hill on the offensive side. And I think that as the season wore on, Gary improved a great deal week to week, and you know, by the end of the season, he was playing his best football.
Probably no big surprise that the 4 top guys in this Monmouth defense in terms of tackles are all seniors or fifth-year seniors because of the understanding that takes place over the course of the career. 2 of those guys have been here for Monmouth for a long time. 2 newer guys in Onakuzi and Tevron Brandon. Clark Coe, Coach, let's talk about him a little bit. 57 tackles, good enough for 3rd on the team. You said self-made player in Dave Demersion. I think you could almost echo that with Clark Coe.
There's no doubt about it. You know, Clark is a guy who's worked extremely hard over the years that he's been with us. He transferred in as a sophomore and, you know, really worked day in and day out to get himself on the field. He's a physical player and really had an excellent year, and we couldn't ask any more than what Clark gave us. You know, our safety position is one of the more difficult positions on our team to master. There's a lot that we ask of that position. There's a lot of little nuances that go into playing a safety position in our scheme, and it's not something that you jump into in year one and have down pat. It takes a while. You've got to see a lot of different things, and the only way to do that is actually get on the field and play. This was certainly the most that Clark has played for us during his career, and I thought he performed very well.
Maybe unfortunate because of the NCAA involvement last year that we didn't get 2 full years of Tevron Brandon, who led the team with 3 interceptions. His skill level, Coach, certainly no question about that at all, but not just skill-wise. In the run support, came up, made some big tackles. Pass game, you knew you could kind of count on him week in and week out, and usually had to have the matchup, whoever the top team target was on the opposition. So Brandon, the transfer from UConn, you knew skill-wise exactly what he was going to bring, but nice to finally see him participate on the field.
It was, and you know, it was so unfortunate and unfair what happened to him a year ago, and you know, we can thank the NCAA for that. You know, certainly I'm not a big fan of theirs, and you know, I think really what they did was a disservice to this young man, to this student athlete. He's a great young man. We're certainly glad that he was a part of our program for the last 2 years, and you know, he was a guy that has a great skill set, and we were able to put him up against the best receiver that we faced week in and week out. And hey, there were some games that, you know, they took advantage of Tevron a little bit, but I really liked the way he continued to compete, continued to battle, and the plays that he was able to make for us this season.
So top 4 wise in terms of tackles, we just ran through the names, all more of the experienced guys. Coach, this may be a season that we saw the emergence of some new players that Monmouth will be able to focus on moving forward now. You know, names like Joe Johnson, who took a major step forward from freshman to sophomore year, John Sikowski, who didn't play last last year, a starter this season. Those two guys will now be the next batch of guys to kind of take Monmouth into the 2014 season when you think about the linebacking core and the secondary.
They will, and you know, you mentioned Joe Johnson first. I think that, you know, a year ago as a true freshman, he was thrown into some starting opportunities, and quite honestly, before he was probably actually ready for those starts, and, you know, he struggled at times, but this year I was very happy with the progress he made, and I think he may have had his best game of the season in the most recent one against Duquesne. You mentioned John Sikowski, who was a very talented high school running back from the local area, made the switch over to the defensive side of football and spent his freshman year really learning the position, and I think what we saw from him this year really causes us to be very optimistic about what his contribution is going to be moving forward. You got to throw Peyton Minnick into that linebacker group as well. Played a significant number of plays for us as a true freshman. Really shows that he has a very good understanding of defensive football, and we like what we saw from him. And Tyler Thompson, who split time at the middle linebacker position with Gary Onokusi, did an excellent job for us. So I think there's a very solid group there, and you got to mention Anthony McDonough as well, who played primarily in our nickel package this year. But that's a group of linebackers that, you know, we expect a lot from moving forward.
Let's move up front to the defensive line, where Monmouth was beset by injuries pretty much throughout the course of the year. When you think that Demetrius Smith, who was maybe expected to be the team's top guy in the middle of the defense, was injured for the entire season, and Eric Masick lost after just a few games about halfway through the season and was never really right when he was in there maybe during the course of the early part of the season. The play coach of Josh Szymanowicz and Andrew Jerzynski, maybe the guys who you thought, all right, they'll go in and spot a little bit, those were the guys who played a huge chunk of the plays during the course of the year.
You know, they were guys that if you would ask me back at the start of training camp what would their contribution would be for us this year, I would have told you that they would be in a rotation. They would go in and spell Eric Masick and Demetrius Smith, and we would get good quality minutes out of those guys and good quality downs. And, you know, what it ends up being for three quarters of the season is they are the starters, and they're playing the most plays up there. And I think the job that they did was admirable. They played very well, certainly exceeded expectations that we had for them maybe earlier in the summer, but very happy with what they've done in their development.
At the end, the pass rush, so important to any scheme when you think about defensively, especially in a 4-3. Darnell Leslie and Pat O'Hara both finished the year with 35 tackles. No shock there because they were both involved in so much in the run game. But, boy, it was their pass rush together when they were on the field really caused a lot of havoc.
It did. You know, having each one of them on opposite sides of the line, you know, gives us a great advantage. And they're both very quick, very explosive players. Not the biggest guys, but they do make up for that and their quickness and their athleticism, and, you know, their ability to get up the field and pressure the quarterback is outstanding. And to think that this was Darnell's first year playing with us, he's a sophomore, a redshirt freshman, and he's got three more years to play. Pat O'Hara has another year, and when you look at, you know, the as you mentioned, the defensive tackle position with what Szymanowicz and Jerzynski were able to do, and now you throw Smith and Masick back in the mix for next year, that's going to be a fairly deep unit.
Leslie on the season, by the way, 7.5 sacks. That was good enough to lead the team. Coach, you know, maybe this year, I think the questions defensively were how the secondary would perform, and it actually turned out to be a really good year working a lot of guys into that mix. We talked about the starters already in Johnson and Brandon. Clark Coe had a really good year. Andrew Sutton with another solid performance in his fifth year, but everybody else under that was able to get some time. When you talk about guys like Javon Moore, Pat Gray, who had seen extensive time in the last couple of years as well, Nick Carroll, a guy who will be back, Ryan Zuchek, a guy who saw some time. It's a young group, and we said Joe Johnson will now be the guy who's kind of the leader of that group, but it's a pretty talented group that you'll have coming back.
It is. It's a very talented group, and as you said, it's a young group, as I think our defense as a whole was, and I'm really excited about the guys that are coming back and, you know, seeing them take another step, another year of development, and seeing what they can do as we get back on the field in 2014.
And it may be a year defensively, final question before we switch gears to the special teams, that at the beginning part of the year, that defensive line. As you mentioned, the guys in Szymanowicz and Jerzynski, they will be back, as will Masick, hopefully, and Demetrius Smith. You have O'Hara back. You've got Darnell Leslie back. So already right there, you've got six guys that have seen over their college career at some point extensive time. We saw Jack Eisenstadt get a lot of time. We saw Zaki Rosari get a lot of time. There's eight right there. I mean, that's the rotation, if you talk about it, at least going in from offseason to maybe preseason next year. And I'm sure things will change and guys may emerge or drop off, but that's a pretty solid eight to start with.
That's a great starting point right there, to have eight guys who have had fairly significant game and field experience to be returning, and many of them who've performed at a high level this last season.
Okay, let's take a quick look at the special teams unit and some of the specialists. We're not going to break down every unit as they are, but we'll talk about the guys who usually get the most attention. Eric Spillane, coach, has used up his eligibility. He will leave as if you look numbers-wise, the best kicker the Monmouth has ever had, maybe talent-wise the same. This year, 10 of 15 on the season, had a career long of 46 that he matched earlier in the course of the season. His PAT is pretty good as well, 33 of 35. A four-year career for Spillane, and everyone says kickers are kickers, but he's been a pretty consistent part of the team over the course of the last four.
He has been, and he's been a valuable weapon for us and a point scorer, and his ability to kick the field goals, and this year he handled the punting duties for much of the season, was a tremendous asset for our football team. You know, Eric's somebody who takes his craft, who takes his skill very seriously. He's always working on it, trying to refine his skills and become a better kicker on a daily basis, and you know, it's no wonder that he has had the success that he has.
Yeah, really, really great career. And you throw Lucas Santangelo in the mix a little bit. He was the kickoff guy for most of the season for Monmouth. Spillane would do it every once in a while. Really good foot, and you would think, at least, coach, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, you would think kind of the heir apparent to take over all of the kicking chores next year.
He will, you know, he's going to be the guy that will handle our kickoffs again, and he would be the next guy in line. He's the other kicker on our team that would handle all the place kicks and point afters and field goals.
Ryan Moore, who split some time during the course of the year with Eric Spillane. Spillane punted the ball 39 times for an average of just under 40 yards, 39.5. Ryan Moore, who punted last season in 2012, came back this year to kick it 17 times, rather, for an average of just under 37 yards. So, again, a little bit of depth in the position. When you think Spillane is leaving, you've got another guy at least behind him.
He does. And, you know, Ryan's a guy who's been on the field for us in the past. He has gotten stronger in terms of his leg strength and his ability to put out there. His average this year was greater than it was a year ago. So we're very happy to have him coming back as well.
So the special teams unit in terms of the specialists for Monmouth, Spillane will leave, Ryan Moore, Lucas Santangelo still with some eligibility during the course of their career as well. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, Coach and I will put a cap on this one with a look ahead to the offseason program 2014, biggest holes to fill, and the schedule all to come up right after this quick two-minute timeout. You're listening to the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show on the Shore Sports Network. Final segment, final show of the 2013 Monmouth football season. Matt Harmon, Kevin Callahan on the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show. MU 6-6 during the course of this year. And coach, before we kind of look ahead to the offseason a little bit, you know, when you think about six up and six down, it was certainly a year that would indicate Monmouth was almost right where they would be, because 2-2 at home, 4-4 away. You know, those numbers, I mean, it's almost ironic when you think you won two, you lost two. You won four, you lost four, 6-6 overall. I know the expectations of this team going into this season, all the way back through the summer and the preseason, there were a lot of question marks on this team, you know, because I think of the independent schedule and that transition going from the NEC to the Big South, a brand new quarterback, a defense that in 2012 was a little bit up and down. I know if I said, Did this team live up to expectations? Unless the team is 12-0 and playing all the way through, no coach is going to say yes. But are you happy at least with maybe the progress that you saw over the course of a 12-game season?
That's a great way to put it, Matt. I'm happy with the progress, with the development of this team. I think that, you know, as you mentioned, there was a lot of skepticism on how this team would perform as an independent, not having a league championship to play for, not having all league teams that were players could be recognized, what effect that would have on this team. And I think, quite honestly, it didn't have an effect at all. You know, back as early as last February, I tried to put together a very challenging schedule, a schedule that would open not only the eyes of our players up, but also of several of our fans when they looked at it, as a schedule that maybe had a little bit of a wow factor to it. And I think we were able to accomplish just that. I mean, going out and playing at Montana State, one of the best college football FCS atmospheres in the country, and then visiting Liberty, again, another terrific venue for college football. I think, you know, that showed our players, that showed our fans, the people that were able to make those trips, what FCS football is all about and the direction that Monmouth football is heading. Coming off those games, I think our players understood that we had to ramp up our game a little bit in all areas, in that, you know, not just individually in terms of how they were playing, but how we play as a program. And I was very happy with the progress that we made as a result of those games. It was a year that I felt that we improved each and every week, maybe not wholesale across the board in every area of our team each week, but there was something that through 11 through 12 games I could look at and say, that's an area where we took a step forward. And I think if you take enough steps forward in enough different areas, you're going to be a much better team at the end of the season.
What did this team coach show you, you know, and I hate to say expected, but you talked about the schedule with Montana State and with Liberty, very different experience that Monmouth has had in the past. You kind of get beaten up a little bit in those two games, 42-24, 45-15. You let one maybe slip away with Lehigh. And at 0-3, I think a lot of people would have said, again, looking at the schedule from an outsider's view, Monmouth could be likely 0-3. And then what direction will the season go after that? Well, the team was really able to respond with three consecutive wins to kind of, I think, prove your point a little bit, to show the resiliency and the fact that there maybe was no league championship or anything to play for. Because at 0-3, a lot of teams make a left when you hope that they go right. This Monmouth team took a right and put together a three-game win streak.
We did, and I think our players deserve an awful lot of credit for that. And, you know, of our first five games of the season, four of them were on the road, and sitting there at 0-3 and having to go up and play at Holy Cross, a team that was picked to contend for the Patriot League Championship, you know, I didn't know what direction we would take, and I thought we took the field out there, had a fast start, and really had a dominating performance for most of that game, and I think that game gave our players a lot of confidence, and that confidence may go back to the Lehigh game, a game that, you know, we've talked about on a number of occasions, kind of had a fluke play on that punt that was quite honestly the difference in that game. I think our team came away from that game feeling pretty good about themselves. Not that we were 0-3, but feeling good about the direction that we were heading. Then we go on the road and get a good win at Holy Cross. Then we have a good win on the road at Columbia. Then we come home and play a former Northeast Conference opponent in Robert Morris and have a dominating performance there. And we get ourselves to 3-3, and I think our team is feeling good about the direction that we're heading.
Mama 3-3 after the second part of the year, and 3-3 at the second part of the season, going into the second and then coming out of the season as well, 6-6 overall. You know, coaches, as I was getting ready for the show here today, I'm going to take the first two games out of it, but the other four losses that Monmouth had, Lehigh, St. Francis, Sacred Heart, and Duquesne, I counted about three plays per game, and I know you could probably do this in any close game, three plays that if Monmouth swings it one way or the other, the season could very likely have a very different feel to it, where maybe 8-4, 9-3 is well within reach. And I know coaches do the same thing. If we had just made a play here, the game probably swings. But all four of those games that close, and maybe the St. Francis, Pennsylvania game, the one that would go third after Liberty and Montana State just by the final score, but the other three certainly well within reach. Is that something now that you as coaches maybe look back and say, all right, we're 6-6, but we're not that far from making the next step?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it even goes beyond that. I think that, you know, we're 6-6, but when we look at it as a coaching staff, and particularly those games that you mentioned, Matt, the St. Francis game, the Sacred Heart game, the Duquesne game, we have to look at those games and say they were games that were well within our chances of winning, and that you know, had we started faster or not had this turnover at an inopportune time or this breakdown on a special teams unit, it would have been a completely different game, and I think those were all winnable games.
When you look, Coach, now with the season coming to a halt, I know there is that now quiet period where I'm sure you let players kind of rest, go home for Thanksgiving, take advantage of catching up on studies and getting through the finals period. When does the off season, if I said the off season starts, when does the off season start for Monmouth? Well, yesterday?
You know, we joke about this all the time, but there really is no off season anymore, and I think that's true in just about every sport. You don't ever just shut it down anymore. You may take a week or two off and relax and recuperate, but you're never shutting it down. You're just moving into a different phase of the season. You know, you have the competitive playing phase, which is your 12-game schedule that runs from September through November, and then you have your training phase where that lasts throughout the winter. Then you have the spring practice phase and then the summer phase, and you just move from one phase to the next, and hopefully you're taking another step in developing in each one of those phases. But to answer your question more specifically, you know, for the next couple of weeks, we don't have any requirements of our football players at all. It's time for them to relax, to recuperate, to enjoy the holidays through Thanksgiving here, to rest up, to focus a little bit more on academics if they need to do that, to get themselves prepared for final exams. They can still work out, but there won't be any mandatory or required activity either in the weight room or in conditioning sessions. We will meet with them. They will be actively involved in our recruitment during this period. But then when we come back after the holiday break, when we come back in January, that's where it really ramps up and we go back to work.
And then spring ball, obviously, to follow after that. Coach, you threw in the word recruiting, and I know you can't mention any specific names, but it is now a different kind of recruiting that Monmouth is doing, making that jump into the Big South, and I'm sure looking to continue a very rigorous non-conference schedule as well. So certainly not to knock any player who is either on the roster or a former part of Monmouth football, but now it's almost time where you have to now go and recruit different type of players to be able to compete at the Big South level.
What we saw at Montana State, at Liberty, I think is evidence of the difference or the gap that exists. I think we have several very, very talented players on our team here at Monmouth, and many of them could play at Liberty and could play at Montana State. What we don't have is the depth that they have, and that's due to the additional scholarships that those programs have on that level, and that's a level we won't get to for a couple of years yet. But we have to now target the player that's going to win a Big South championship, that can compete in the Big Sky Conference on a day-in, day-out basis. And I think our coaching staff has done an excellent job of that. And where recruiting has changed for us in particular in this last year is that, you know, we're not going out at this time of year and uncovering players, so to speak. We may come upon somebody that we really like, but most of the players that we are recruiting now, we have been recruiting since last April. We've been in constant contact with them throughout the summer. They were on our campus either for a camp or for a summer visit. They've been here to some of our home games. We've been out to see them and watch them play, and now it's about closing the deal on these guys and getting them to commit and sign with us. So this next couple of weeks is going to be incredibly important for our coaching staff in securing these commitments.
Coach, has the recruiting geographic part of it, has it now increased for Monmouth a little bit? So heavily based in the past, obviously New Jersey, Pennsylvania, always that little spot in Maryland that the team has had success for. But now, as Monmouth makes trips in different parts of the country, both non-conference and in-conference play in the Big South, you would think, obviously, the recruiting area now increases as well.
It will, and it's stretching in both directions. It's certainly stretching a little deeper into the South, into Virginia, and maybe touching a bit upon North Carolina, and we're doing a little bit now down in Florida, and I think that's a natural because of the schedule that we will be playing in the Big South and the proximity of many of those schools to where we will be playing, and we want to make sure that we're trying to get players from those areas. It's also stretching north a little bit. We're a little bit more into Connecticut and parts of Massachusetts at this point. But, you know, our bread and butter and the core of our recruitment does come from the local area. It comes from the Jersey Shore. Shore Conference football is extremely talented. It's very, very well coached, and I think that this year in the Shore Conference, it's going to be another very talented year, maybe one of the more talented in the recent 5 or 6 years. And, you know, we're actively involved in a number of the local guys right now.
You know, I can remember back to that Montana State game, and as recently as the last game with Duquesne, what I noticed on both rosters, and we saw it at different points during the course of the year, where a lot of transfers on certain teams, you know, depending on the makeup of the roster and what team maybe it is. So that's a route that Monmouth can go to as well. You know, looking for the guy who's at the FBS level who maybe doesn't feel like he's getting his fair shot but could come down immediately and transfer down into FCS football and play right away rather than having to sit a year.
Well, that's always something that, you know, we have our ear to the ground on. And I think, you know, when you look to bring in transfers, you have to be very careful. You've got to make sure that the player, the young man that you're bringing in is the right fit, not just for the university, but certainly for the team. And you want to make sure that you're continuing the great team chemistry that we have here at Monmouth. So we're very selective in that regard. I know everyone's got a little bit of a different philosophy on that. I know, you know, Duquesne, for instance, they had 18 transfers on the roster, the team we played last Saturday. We have probably four or five on our roster right now, and they made great contributions to us. We mentioned Tevin Brandon. We mentioned Gary Onokusi. We mentioned Brandon Hill, all guys who transferred into our program. And that's something that we'll continue to explore, although we won't dump all of our energies in to going the transfer route.
Coach, a couple more before we wrap up. Biggest holes to fill. If I said offensively, I think the need is obviously pretty apparent, having three fifth-year seniors graduate off the offensive line.
There's no question about it. We need to fill three holes in the offensive line. The departures of Patterson, Hunchak, and Maxwell, guys who played an awful lot of football for us, make it very important that we bolster that area up. And we do have some young guys coming up who are backups this year, but it's an area where we've got to develop players and also secure some more depth. I think we've also got to continue to work on the tight end position with the graduation of Mike McClafferty. And then when you look at our receivers and running backs, you know, on the surface, you say, well, we've got everybody back in that area, but all of those guys are going to be seniors next year, or the top line guys are. And Neil Sterling, Thad Richards, Lamar Davenport, KB Asante, Julian Hayes, all will be playing their final year for Monmouth in 2014. So we've got to get the next group ready there as well.
When you think defensively real quick, everyone always says front seven. Well, there's a back seven, too, with the linebackers being the three that go either way. We said in our last segment, defensively, the strength of this team might be having so many guys in the defensive line back, but certainly there will be a contrated effort, I would think, to make sure that some of the young guys that saw play this year get even more up to speed so that the linebacking core and the secondary are ready to fire come 2014.
It's certainly the back seven where we need to really continue to grow and develop. Fortunately, we had a lot of younger guys receive some playing time, some on-the-field experience this season. We've got to continue to work with those guys and get all of them to yet another level of play. I think there's a good core of guys there that have contributed and showed that they have the ability to be successful on the field for us. We just need to have them take yet another step in their development.
Coach, final question. I know not probably 100% finalized, and it's not released yet or official. We know that the Big South will be the conference opponents next year, but as the schedule continues to kind of shape up, what are we looking at for 2014?
Well, right now we've got 11 games scheduled for 2014. It is a year in which you can play 12 if you so choose. Whether or not we schedule the 12th game will probably depend on who that opponent is and where that game will be played. If we have an opportunity to get another quality opponent, a name opponent for a home game, we would certainly do it. If there's an opportunity to get what I call a top flight opponent and have to travel, we may do that. Or we may just stay at 11. We do have six games scheduled before a bye week, and then after the bye, we go right into the Big South schedule for five consecutive weeks. We will return the game out to Lehigh. We owe them that from this year. We will return games to Robert Morris and Duquesne for visiting with us this year. And we do have Columbia coming here as well.
Well, looking forward to obviously seeing the recruiting mix. The next time that we are really talking Monmouth football will be on our signing day special, something that we've seen the last couple of years at GoMUHawks.com. Coach, want to thank you for your time during the course of all of our Tuesdays here, getting the show put together and bringing in a great assortment of guests, whether it be coaches, whether it be players, administration on some levels as well. This was a lot of fun. Looking forward to doing it again next year.
Thanks, Matt. And, you know, the same goes for me. I certainly appreciate this and the job that you do with this show each and every Tuesday.
Some quick thank yous to go out. The good folks at Jax, who are our hosts for a good portion of our shows. Greg Viscomi, Eddie Ancapinti, Gary Kowal over in the Monmouth Athletics Department. Ray Malaspina, Brian Cedillo, among those engineering and pushing buttons for us during the course of the show at the Shore Sports Network. Kevin Williams, the Shore Sports Network Director. For the head coach, Kevin Callahan, this is Matt Harmon. For the final time, we say goodbye on this Tuesday night. This has been the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show on the Shore Sports Network.